This is the Social Geek Radio Network.
Get ready for a dose of positivity with a side of sass. It's Stay Effing Positive, brought to you by the fearless franchise consultants at Stay in Your Lane. Our mission? It's simple. To change the status quo and bring some much-needed empathy to the franchise world. Don't be fooled by our warm, fuzzy approach. We've got the expertise to help your business succeed. We love taking good brands to cult brands. So, put on your seatbelts, grab a snack, and join us on this journey to make the franchise world a better place, one episode at a time. Stay positive and stay in your lane. Hi, Brett.
Hello. How's your week going?
My week's going fine. My day has been a little discombobulated. And I'm using that word specifically.
We all have those days, I think.
Yeah, discombobulated. I'm not on my mic, which I have a really nice podcast mic, but I can't find my dongle. Yeah. That's a real word.
That so dang dongle.
If I sound like crap, I'm really sorry. But this is real life. And we're going to roll with it. The truth of the matter is my mother, who, God bless her little heart, came over while I was at IFA and she was watching my dog, and she decided to slightly infringe on my boundaries, slightly, and clean my office. So you may have been privy to a phone call about 5 minutes ago where I called her and asked if she knew where my dongle was, but she does not know where my dongle is. And God bless mothers. So
honestly, yep.
It's not because I'm incompetent or incapable. It's because she's... her love language is absolutely acts of service. So she likes to do things like that. And I don't mind.
Yeah.
Usually.
My wife is the same way. And there's so many times where we'll kind of stand there and be like, did I move something? And I'm just forgetting where I left it. Or did she clean my stuff up trying to help? And now it could be anywhere that's logical to her, which is usually never logical to my chaos brain.
Same. Yeah. I think we're both a little neurodivergent and we both
have
these operating systems where we know where everything is, even though it looks a little bit like we should, we do. But anyway.
Everything's in very specific, chaotic places for a reason.
I mean, like right next to my computer was my dongle, but it's not there anymore. I'm going to wonder how many times I can say dongle in this sentence. Okay, moving on. Let's start this thing. Do you want to talk about what we're talking about today?
So today we have two very exciting guests coming on our podcast for an interview. We have David Smith, who's with the IFA Foundation, and Richard Snow, who's the VP of SBA Loans at WSFS Bank. All right, so let's get started. David, Richard, welcome to the Stay Effing Positive podcast. We're so excited to have you both here. Yeah,
thanks for coming, guys. We're really excited.
We'd love to have each of you introduce yourselves to the listeners. We can start there and carry on.
Well, my name is Richard Snow. I'm glad to be a part of the Stay Effing Positive podcast. I can't help but not say that without a smile on my face. It forces you to keep that top of the mind. I'm the vice president for the SBA National Franchise Program at WSFS Bank. I'm the chair for the IFA's Black Franchise Leadership Council. I serve on the IFA's Diversity Institute board, and I'm also serve on the IFA Foundation's board. And I'm glad to be here to have a conversation, a courageous conversation about diversity in franchise, diversity, equity, and inclusion in franchising.
And yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Brett and Ingrid, for having me. My name is David Smith. I'm the Senior Manager of Diversity Programs with the IFA Foundation. Here, I work with each of our affinity groups, our Black Franchise Leadership Council, our Hispanic Latino Franchise Leadership Council, and our Pride Franchise Leadership Council, all of which are comprised of volunteer leaders who've raised their hands to kind of further the messaging of franchising for diverse communities. And so I'm happy to be here really to talk a lot about the work that we're doing and some of the really good enthusiasm that we've been able to build over the past several months. So thank you all for having me here and excited to be a part of the conversation.
Absolutely. And David, you and I have been able to work together a little bit through my involvement with the Pride Franchise Leadership Council. We are so excited to have both of you here today from the Black Franchise Leadership Council. We really wanted to highlight the work that each of you and the council are doing and just give all of our listeners a little bit of insight into what's that like and how that plays out, especially in franchising. I think to kick things off, we'd love to just learn a little bit more about each of you individually. How did you find your way into the DEI space, into the franchise industry? I don't know if one of you wants to start and take it from there.
So I'll start. So within the franchising space, I've been in financing for over 20 plus years. Within the franchising, I was working at Benetrends Financial as an SBA funding specialist. And we did from the point of access to capital, providing a lot of franchisees within the North American corridor, Canada, the U.S., with the financing to open up their franchise and begin to grow their business. I never forget going to the Jacob Javits Center. And at the Jacob Javits, it's, you see, you know, thousands of business owners in there hustling and bustling, speaking to their brand, the success of their brands. And you see all this energy from the individuals walking that trade show floor, looking at these opportunities, looking to take advantage of that American dream of starting their business. In the midst of being in that room, I felt the energy, but when looking around, I didn't see a lot of faces that represented me and who I am. And I said, well, this has to be something that I can take back to my community to speak to more Black entrepreneurs about the franchising space. It can't be this best kept secret that you don't know if you can attain. That was obtainable. I'm out here financing it. How can I get this message out here? So from that point on, I began to look at the diverse market segments and how the company and companies were attracting diverse market segments and what strategies can we take to support. And in my research and looking at the International Franchise Association, I saw that they had the Diversity Institute with a number of members on there that I related to and had relationships with, that I said, maybe this is something here that I can give my time to support and make a difference, be another component of this to support and make it stronger, amplify the word, amplify the voice of franchising. So that was really some of my early exposure. But the drive was always there. For years, I've been supporting from a financial education, financial literacy standpoint, standpoint in the marginalized communities, supporting with how you can support yourself in managing your own finances to make a difference within your community. So it all kind of was a perfect marriage, so to speak. I was already doing the work. I just didn't know I had a partner like the IFA Diversity Institute. So,
yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, and I would say similarly, my journey has really been preparing me for this role. My entire career, I've worked at national nonprofit associations that advocate for underrepresented communities. And so starting with my tenure at the U.S. Black Chamber of Commerce, I was there for several years learning about the challenges and the opportunities that African-American entrepreneurs are facing. And there I was really able to understand, you know, the marketplace of minority business and understand what challenges exist and how to overcome them, what coalitions need to be built in order to be successful in the marketplace. And then, you know, transitioning even to another organization where we worked primarily with low to moderate income communities. My region was the southern region. So I was working on like affordable housing and business development issues with nonprofits and business associations in the southern United States, which was really unique to me because although I wasn't, you know, I'm not from there, I'm from upstate New York. I was still able to build some really strong relationships with these diverse communities in the southern region, primarily just from having an open heart and open mind to begin our dialogues. And so, you know, happy to kind of talk about that a little bit more and some of the fruit that I saw from that. But really, then after the low to moderate income communities, I transitioned to a new role working on behalf of diverse owned private equity funds and hedge funds and private equity firms. And there, again, it's still advocating for an underrepresented group in the marketplace. But, you know, these are some very successful entrepreneurs running some very large $1 million, sometimes $1 billion companies. And it was interesting there to see that despite their success, they're still having barriers. They're still facing barriers accessing capital or accessing institutions and networks. And so that has kind of led me now to IFA, where I'm learning franchising. I'm with entrepreneurship in general, but the franchise business model is one that's very unique to me. And I think there's a lot of opportunities to kind of build out some more diverse franchisee networks and franchisor networks within the space.
You guys both talked about the barriers that prevent franchising growing in diverse spaces. And I'd love to talk about some of those barriers and how we get over them. And just, you know, even if it's a fast, like your three biggest points of diversity and how we move through them, or opportunities that you guys see. So being on the IFA Black Leadership Franchise Leadership Council, what you guys see that you're doing to help promote growth in diverse spaces and franchising.
So I would say, I would start with, we started when we built the council, you always start with the problem in mind. What's the issue? What are the barriers? And you build around that. So one of the number one barriers being education and learning. We found that to be educating on the opportunities of franchising and how to take that next step, whether it be the FDD, understanding that, whether it be creating your funding package, putting that together, or standard operating procedures. So education and learning, and a lot of that you see the IFA is already doing through the CFB program. Second is access to capital and funding strategies, understanding the barriers that are there, and how do you access that capital, which lenders are open to supporting startups, what is your equity injection, are you registered by the SBA, understanding that process, how to use the ROPs, for example, if you want to use ROPs to finance your project, how does private equity play into this, or venture capitalists play into this? So access to capital and funding strategy. And then marketing and communication outreach, consistently telling these stories. So right now, this is the marketing, the communication outreach component of it, telling the stories, creating the awareness, staying consistent in that story, highlighting the success of Black entrepreneurs out within the franchising community. So if an individual can see an example of success, they can replicate and become that example of success. And then the last piece of it is coalition building community partnerships. What we're seeing here, we're partnering. We're the BFLC, the Pride Council, the Hispanic Council, the Veteran Committee, the VetFran, the Women's Committee. We're all a community, and we have these partnerships, these synergies. You have individuals that are diverse in all categories. That means to check all the boxes. That can certainly, you know, that can work within each one of these councils. So that's part of that partnership. How do we build that synergy to support and amplify our collective voices? So we found those to be the pillars that we're fighting against. We're fighting to support. Fighting to create the awareness, to understand and access the franchise opportunity for Black entrepreneurs. We want to create and maintain organizational culture where inclusion, diversity, and creativity are valued. We want to educate franchisors, franchisees, suppliers, the franchise community to provide a new perspective and stimulate the discussions of Blacks in franchising. Then we want to provide regular opportunities for this exchange with council members, any appropriate companies that want to support, boards, committees, other groups within the Diversity Institute or the IFA Foundation or external groups. So this is really our overall goal. That is our mission. And this is how we begin to create that awareness and spread that word by coming on podcasts and staying effing positive about everything we do in our walks, how we walk on a day-to-day basis to achieve the goal.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I got chills listening to you talk about kind of the collective voices too, and the way that we can work together. I think sometimes we find ourselves off on an island when in reality, we are all working towards the same goal, and our best bet is to work together on that. I think sometimes our communities don't realize, or even just if we're solely looking at franchising, it's a lot of people when you really start looking at all of these communities together that are impacted. And it's not like anyone's trying to drive change for just a small group. It's we're trying to drive collective change for everybody across each of these areas to, you know, beat some of these barriers, or at least alleviate a little bit some of those issues and help people get through there and really start driving that change. That's awesome.
And I'll even give you the examples. After the IFA convention in Vegas, I had so many brands reach out to me and said that the words you spoke, they touched me. And I realized that, one, I fell in line with the statistic of being 8% Black franchisee ownership, but I want to find a way to change that. Now, that's awareness. That is textbook awareness, that they see the issue, they recognize the issue, now they're taking steps to solve the issue. And these are, if we don't continue to place this information out there in the universe, then the energy can't be reciprocated back and finding that solution.
I would just add to that, part of the reason why so many people reached out to Richard at convention is because he won the award for the Raleigh Harrison Award for Diversity. And it was a really good moment for him and his family. But I found myself even tearing up a little bit when he was speaking, because, you know, he's so passionate about this. And, you know, I've only known him for less than a year. But when you meet people who are in this space and are truly committed, you know, you're happy to see them succeed, and you're happy to see them be recognized for the work that they're doing. And so just with Richard getting that recognition, it pushes all of us forward, because people are now invested into the work that he's doing. And so that helps kind of spur these conversations more into diversity and how we, you know, amplify our voices collectively. So David, congratulations, Richard. Yeah. Wanted to say that again.
Yeah, so, yeah, big can congrats.
Tell us about that award just a little bit, so that people that weren't there didn't see that, too, what that is and what it means and how it affects the industry as a whole.
So Ronald E. Harrison Award. So Ronald E. Harrison was a Pepsi executive who served on and was one of the founding members of the IFA Diversity Institute Board that still works within the Diversity Institute Board until this very day. Has a whole lot of zeal and passion, very intelligent in regards to our strategic direction, supportive in the steps that we take to create, to actually execute this vision. He's also sponsoring our research data in the beginning to have us understand what does the diverse landscape look like, what are the data and the metrics that apply to that. And just up until Orlando, he was facilitating roundtables, diversity discussions, giving a historical reference and where we came from. So this award is named after one of our founders for the Diversity Institute Board. And, you know, I don't do any of this work for recognition or awards. David will tell you, I do it from the heart. That's really it. So they surprised and shocked me with the award. Those are giants. So I look to continue to learn from them. But if I can make a difference, that is the goal. And I'm honored to have received the award. In any way that I can go out there, continue to spread this message, to get more companies involved, and creating sustainable diversity, equity, and inclusion programs to create that next generation of franchisees and that next Ronald E. Harrison Award winner. I'll take it. If that's the goal, you know, I'll take it.
Wow, that was incredible, and congratulations again. It kind of makes me think of a conversation that I keep having with people, and this ties back to David and Richard, both of you having experience working with institutions. I think often people get discouraged when change takes time. All change takes time. There's a very different approach if you're talking about driving change at a small company versus driving institutional, oftentimes even systematic, which is an entirely other conversation, but you both have experience seeing what it takes to drive institutional change, the speed or lack thereof that might come from that. A lot of times I hear people say like, oh, transformation, it's impossible. It's not going to happen. Change isn't going to happen. And I always try to help them think about it from a different perspective of, hey, if you look at the change that's already happened over XYZ years, because people are working on this, and sometimes the work happens in one time frame and the actual results and the change that comes from that comes later on, like, you know, in the example here with the award, how, you know, what have you guys seen? What can you speak to that? What advice would you have to change makers out there who are hoping to make a difference, but maybe get discouraged because it takes longer and you have to go through more appropriate processes to drive that type of change?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm one of those people, or have been one of those people, who've been completely discouraged and completely disappointed and just tired and exhausted. And honestly, during those times, it's important for me to connect with people who can remind me of why I'm doing this work. Because, you know, sometimes it feels like you take two steps forward, but then take three steps back. And so being able to keep your perspective is very important. So I just, like, personally say, have those people in your life that you can kind of release to. But also, you know, the change does happen. I remember I was even skeptical of the ability for organizers here in Washington, D.C. and around the country about the changing of the Washington football team name. That was just a few years ago. And I would see them out all the time. And even myself, I would think, like, you're wasting your time. You know, the NFL is such a large institution. There's so much history. There's so much behind this decision. I just think there's probably a better way for you to spend your advocacy. Mm-hmm. But I was totally surprised. And in a good way, they demonstrated that, you know, consistent organizing and pressure upon the people who are making decisions and the people who are stakeholders in this, you can make change. It may be incremental, but it's still in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, that's not necessarily an example within franchising, but it's definitely an example on the main stage of, like, yeah, you know, enough support or influence from the right people can really make things happen. So it's keep your eyes on the long goal, but make sure you have some shorter wins and then just people in the trenches with you to hold your hand as you're going.
Yeah.
And that's a great segue, David, because keeping your eyes on the long goal, keeping yours, is singular. So you need to identify a singular point of contact within your organization that's keeping their eyes on diversity, equity, and inclusion. So one of the big things that you're starting to see take place is chief diversity officers within these franchising brands. That's needed. One example that I always like to tout is James Fripp over at Yum. Best in class from a diversity, equity, inclusion standpoint with the work he's doing inside a global organization. You can't get no more diverse than that. And the strategies they put together, the playbooks they put together internally, not just from a development process, they have it from an operating process. You see executives, wow, in an organization that look the same. And then you move over and then you see what Wendy's is doing. Wendy's last year came out to the San Diego conference and they're working with women-owned banks to make sure more women become franchisee owners within the Wendy's network and brand and provide those brand opportunities out there. Then you go and you see it from the Z level, where, you know, we had the pleasure of working with Malcolm Jenkins, where he's a multi-unit Papa John's franchisee. And you see the work that they're doing in there and expanding across their units there. So you see his voice from the Z level. And then you look at Shaquille O'Neal, who we had as a keynote speaker,
Either
for being a multi-unit franchisee. Now he's a Zor at Big Chicken. So look at the diversity pieces taking place and tag back in. And then I even go to Damon Dunn, who was an NFL player, transitioned from the NFL. Now I think he owns over, quote me, get me wrong, but it's maybe over 21 Dunkin' Donuts within the Inspire brand network. And he's constantly speaking out there. So you have to find, if you have individuals in your franchise organization with a voice, you have to highlight that voice. But then you have to focus on diversity and have somebody on your executive team appointed to getting the necessary training to understand the strategies to have a successful DEI program. And then once you have that officer, you have to create some form of affinity council inside your organization. It has to start there and understand and create studies and surveys on what your employees feel, how your employees feel you are achieving your DEI goals, diversity. Do they feel like their voice is being heard? Do they feel like there's enough programs and strategies? What can be done? What are our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats as an organization? And once you give them that platform, you know, create it in a comfortable environment where they feel comfortable to share and be able to report that back up to somebody at a senior level that can stand behind it, not just through words, but through actions, through monetary resources. And then from there, once you have the chief diversity officer, the affinity council, now allow them to partner with external organizations like the BFLC or the Pride Council or the Expanded Council to talk to others to bring some of those best practices back in. And that's part of the coalition building.
Tell me, how would you, everything that you're saying is phenomenal and it works ideally in a huge organization, but tell me what you think about with a small, scrappier organization, what they need to do to implement some of that when they don't have the budget for a huge DEI council or they don't have the budget to bring in people to speak. How can they still get in at the ground level and start these changes in their organizations when they're small, they're an emerging franchise or, and how can they make a difference?
I'll give you an example. Some organizations that I've seen do it already, they've appointed somebody who maybe serves in a dual role, maybe somebody who's talent and acquisition, HR. And sometimes you see them share that role where they're covering DEI. The Affinity Council, it costs nothing to create. It's just for you to really put it out there and have somebody appointed as an executive. It don't have to be the same person. It could be somebody that's willing to take up the mantle. It may be one of your top franchisees or a franchisee that's diverse in your network and say, I'm so glad you're doing this. I'm willing to take charge as a volunteer leader to lead this agenda and being able to report back what we're trying to accomplish and do. So, you know, so those two pieces right there, you don't necessarily need the largest of budget. As it grows, you will, as your organization grows. But if when you start putting leaders in place to guide the strategy, that's the piece that you have there. The councils will, we're a council that formed out of necessity, you know, that formed out of, okay, we want to amplify the voice of Black entrepreneurs, amplify the voice of the Pride Council, amplify the voice of Hispanic franchise leaders. And they sent the call out. The IFA sent the call out and say, hey, Ricky Amos, who's the executive director of the foundation, say, I have an idea. It started with her courageous leadership of saying, I have an idea. This is what I'm trying to accomplish. And brought us all into, I say a room, but a Zoom call. And we got on the phone and we went through what this would look like from one stage to another. And as volunteer leaders, we've stepped up to the plate to achieve that. And what you're seeing is the fruits of those courageous conversations.
Yeah, and I would also add, you know, I'm really interested in figuring out how to get buy-in from the top down within a company. And, you know, if there's a way for me to demonstrate or a colleague to demonstrate the benefits of having an inclusive workforce to those decision makers at the top, I think that that's key. I'm sure, you know, you, Brett and Ingrid, probably already have the resources and the techniques to get that buy-in. But, you know, if you can show from like an HR perspective how having an inclusive workforce that can retain employees for longer is better for the company as a whole, that's a win. And that's affecting the bottom line for those who may be slower to jump on the DEI board. Everybody understands dollars and cents. And so when you can make those compelling arguments, I think that makes your DEI strategy that much stronger.
We talk about the bottom line a lot at Stay in Your Lane, and that's really where everybody wants to make more money, right? Mm-hmm. So right. What are the case studies that we can show them? Like, hey, this company implemented a DEI program, and then the next year they're making 16 to 23% more. So what does it look like, right? So I think you hit the nail on the head there as far as growing too. We don't have all the answers.
Yeah. Well, and
but we're happy to learn.
I think too, there's a piece of it with when it comes to business executives where maybe they don't understand how their employees really feel, or, you know, maybe it's a team of all white executives and they don't know what the Black experience is like for their employees. You know, it's really interesting. There's one stat that has always stuck with me because it's just a gut punch. And that's, In 2017, the Harvard Business Review did a study and they actually found that 40% of Black employees feel like it's never acceptable to speak out about experiences of bias. Look, you hear my voice break when I say that, just because it makes me feel so ill that anybody would feel that way. Part of where I see that play out is almost people avoid talking about those things because they're uncomfortable or it's uncharted territory. They're uneducated, maybe. My goodness, there's people who I think are even afraid to just say the word Black because they worry about stepping on toes or not communicating appropriately. And when you don't ask some of those questions or you don't try, you miss out on being able to support all kinds of people. And back to the bottom line, happy employees produce better. They're going to help you, you know, have a more profitable company. What would your advice be to executives who maybe fall in that category where they're not sure how to ask their Black employees how they can support them better, or maybe they don't know how to navigate some of those conversations? From your perspective and experience, what would your advice be there?
Well, you know, what's interesting, you've seen a lot of studies. So Gallup has a program called Voices. And Gallup does a survey on Black voices and give insight on Black America, research around it. But they ask these key diversity, equity, and inclusion questions in a survey that companies are utilizing to look exactly and get a lens, and a lens that's is completely anonymous. You as an employee, you can take this survey. It goes back to senior leadership and can directly communicate exactly how you feel. So you see a lot of organizations taking that route and funneling that information back up. Or even in my own organization, they've created councils where we're able to sit down and really speak to how we feel, you know, what's taking place within the organization, how we feel, and how to change that and how to stand up. And when issues do happen, because they always will, you know, being included in what the response to that is. I think that's another critical piece, because we've had, you know, we've had extreme issues such as George Floyd, you know, that took place where, you know, the world had to process that together. Mm-hmm. And I think because we were in lockdown and the world was quiet, you had to absorb that and take that in and fully pro. There was no distractions at that point for you to see what took place. And you seen out of that, you seen the initial outrage, the continued outrage, but then now you see solutions trying to be developed overall. And there's so many things outside of that, that, you know, that amplified and highlighted so many other things that were taking place wrong within the world, and really fighting up and standing behind your voice, and how, you know, you also count, you know, Black entrepreneurs can be successful entrepreneurs within a franchise and brand as well. You know, so because anybody with LGBTQ or Hispanic, you know, it doesn't matter. You can be successful, and there's a voice here for you. And every time one of us stand up and give somebody else the courage to do the same, you know, and I think that's half the battle is people feel like they need to dim, you know, dim their voice and not, you know, say, hey, you know, I'm here. This is what I need. These are the topics that are important to me. And I think the work that we're doing, the councils are doing, that you're doing as well, having this conversation is absolutely amazing. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, calls for a lot of vulnerability.
I would love to ask on the heels of that, either David or Richard, what's your advice to someone who feels like they don't know what to say, or they don't know how to start, or they may say the wrong thing to the wrong person? And it's obviously not your job to educate them, but like, how do you deal with grace, and how do you walk those lines? And as a person who comes from a lot of privilege, how do we continue to bridge those gaps and educate ourselves without feeling on edge all the time?
That's such a tough thing to, it's a tough dance. I say first on the listener's end, I think we both need to be bold with grace. You know, like, I need to be able to listen and accept if you say something wrong. I know, you know, I say give people the benefit of the doubt. And so I think, yeah, I would say really as a listener, if we can create an opportunity or create a space where people don't have to feel like they're walking on eggshells, that goes a long way. It definitely can be challenging, especially, you know, when you feel like your heart is in the right place and you want to do something, and you don't know how to reach some of your colleagues. You know, I would start small. You know, how are you feeling? Do you want to talk? Is there something that I can do, you know, to help? You know, it's delicate. I would just say, be delicate. Don't expect them to have an answer. Don't expect them to join a committee because something happened. You know, it's both sides need to be graceful and allow for the other to make mistakes if we're really trying to push this conversation forward. Dialogue is a two-way street, and we don't want either side being afraid or timid to speak to the other.
Yeah,
I would have to say ditto. You know, exactly what he stated. There's not a wrong or a right way, but for the individual listening, having a willing ear, open ear to hear, and not without judgment, not feeling like it's being directed towards that individual, but just overall speaking to the issues. I think that's spot on, being able to be open to listen and then working together to achieve those solutions. I think it's key. So, David, you spot on. I have nothing to add to what you just said.
Yeah, I just as an example, a friend of mine, after the George Floyd incident happened, his company quickly assigned him to be like the leader of the diversity community at his job. And, you know, he told me privately, you know, I'm not prepared for this. I didn't volunteer for this. I feel uncomfortable now that they've just assigned me to this role. And so that's the thing. It's like, even if you think, okay, this is the Black employee, he's probably feeling some type of way, I think you should check in with that employee first before, you know, assigning mm-hmm. them or doing.
Yeah, I was just gonna add a footnote there, and I think a lot of people saw this after everything that happened with George Floyd, but I think it kind of a panic set in, and everybody was like, where's my black friend? I need to ask them for the answers. And I just can't stress it enough. Don't take that approach. Google is free. Try to educate yourself a little bit first. I think a great example of that, one of my really good friends, Tori, she listens to this. Hopefully she's going to be sharing. But we started a DEI council at Skyhawks, and it's primarily actually a team of white people. And what happened was we wanted to educate ourselves and learn. And, you know, Tori's approach was, I was worried she was going to have to go on and be the black woman that led the DEI council. And so she was actually hesitant to join. But when she saw that it was white people and we're trying to educate ourselves and we want to make a difference, she was just beside herself. She was so excited to see that there was a community and the people that she worked with cared about and supported her enough to want to educate themselves. And she, I think a lot of times people do get tokenized and we don't want to go that route, right? You got to teach yourself a little bit. And then once you're educated, you can go into those conversations. And I, in my experience, have found they're more productive at that point in time. It's, you want to try to be kind and compassionate and welcome people. But there's a fine line. There's a very fine line there. And it depends on the relationship that you have with that person too.
Right. And you also, I look at it as not just a corporate initiative, it's a human initiative. Yep. Right?
Oh yeah.
So many times they're driving and they're creating these DEI platforms, but they're not tying it back to the humanistic approach of it. And then you get caught up that, hey, we checked the box. Yeah. It's not a box check, you know? So it's something that has to be embedded in your culture from that standpoint. So one of the things I stated when I gave a speech, I said, etched into the DNA. Yeah. That's the key. It has to be there. It has to be authentic. It has to be genuine, because the individuals within your organization will pick that up. You know, they will pick that up, and it will further create a divide within your organization if it feels like it's just lip service and not something authentic. So I think that's also important. And I would say it's a marathon. It's a life marathon. It's not a race. It's not the first to say I did a DEI. I'd rather somebody take it slow and build methodically. You know, either, you know, reach out to a collaborative partner, figure out some best practices, you know, maybe a consultant comes in and assess, you know, strategies. What are you currently doing well that already works? I think a big thing that we do is recognition matters a lot. I've been speaking to a lot of our franchising partners, and I said, give me all of your diverse franchisees that's doing a great job, and I would love to highlight, give them to me. And let us highlight each one of them and push out that they're doing great. They feel great about it. Let us tell that story, just like you're telling stories out here. You know, so I think that's important for all of us to do, is to highlight Black entrepreneurs, Brown entrepreneurs, Hispanic entrepreneurs, highlight everybody that is out there and tell those stories, because now they feel like my company got behind me. And then the company can see the impact. The raw data impact. They can look at the LinkedIn impressions, the Instagram impressions, the Facebook impressions. Look at who's looking at your organization. Look at the amount of people after you put a few diverse posts out there that now want to apply and say, I relate to that organization, or I relate to that person. It starts, it's almost that small. It can be something that small to really light the fire.
We want to see ourselves, yeah, right, in what we do. So if you're, yes, highlighting people that look like you, that have the same story as you, right, we can relate and we feel like we're safe there. So yes, it's a beautiful thing when we're able to tell a story well. Wrapping this up, I'd love to know about any resources that you both love that you want to highlight, or anything that the Black Franchise Leadership Council is getting ready to do that we can promote for you or just talk about. And any last thoughts that you have as we wrap this up.
So we just had an amazing IFA convention post-conference call, where I think we had over maybe 70 individuals on that call. That's excited about aligning with one of the committees. And I spoke to each committee earlier, our access to capital, community partnerships, our marketing and our education and learning outreach. And we probably had maybe 10 individuals for each committee. So we have a lot of programming planned for 2023. We're definitely looking at putting together a hotel owner symposium together. We're going to do something wrapped around Juneteenth. We're going to do great highlights during Black Business Month that's coming up. We're going to also have a lot of more educational programs that are out there. And there's much more to come that I can't put out there yet, but there's a lot of big wins. And one of the things at conference that they spoke to, I like to give kudos to Omar Simmons, who actually donated a sizable contribution to the foundation to support with diverse initiatives. And also John Lancaster over at Choice Hotels. He also was a sponsor and also did a contribution to support with diverse initiatives. So there's a lot of excitement that's taking place out there. I would say reach out to myself or David. You'll have our contact information at the end of the show, or you can go on LinkedIn to the Black Franchise Leadership Council. Just put that in your search bar, click follow, connect, and instant message or direct message either David or myself. We'd be glad to reach out and find out what committee you align with so you can help us continue to make a difference throughout the course of this year.
Speaking of those committees, just a little sidebar before you go, David, you guys, I walked by all of the committees during the IFA and you guys were absolutely having the most fun and were the most rambunctious out of each of the groups, just to let you know.
Yeah, and it sounds like we had them separate this year. It seems like we're going to join everybody together next year, so awesome. It's going to be even crazier.
That's amazing.
But yeah.
Are y'all ready for that party? I hope y'all are ready for that
party. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're ready.
Awesome.
I would say so. Thank you. We definitely have a lot of programming and events coming up, again, primarily just around education and outreach about franchising. But yeah, as Richard said, please reach out to both of us with any questions. We do have one Pathways to Franchising event coming up here in Maryland on Wednesday, April 12th. We're encouraging people to come out. We have several different brands here to talk about, you know, franchising 101 and giving their firsthand experience on starting a franchise, picking the right franchise, finding the capital to grow that company. And so if we have a successful event there, we hope to take that program and replicate it in different cities across the country.
Who should come to that program? Like, who is it tailored for, David?
It's in partnership with the Maryland Black Chamber of Commerce and the Prince George's County Economic Development Corporation. But we're targeting anybody who's interested in learning about franchising, like franchising 101. What is a franchise? How do I learn about the FDD? You know, just the real basics about franchising.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you both for taking the time to chat with us. I've got a million more questions that I think both Ingrid and I could talk through with you. But this information has just been so invaluable. I think our listeners have a ton that they can walk away with and implement in both their personal and their professional lives. Thank you both.
Thank you for having me. This was great. I'll be staying effing positive for the rest of my week, and I appreciate you all.
Good.
I thank you both as well. This was an amazing conversation, courageous conversation, uplifted my spirit to keep going and pushing forward and making sure we're keeping the mission and vision first. I'm glad to call y'all my running mates, counting partners, you know, out here doing great work for the IFA Diversity Institute. And I look forward to the next conversation. Whatever you need our support, and let me know as well. And vice versa. I love Paul, as he already tell you. My wife loves Paul. Paul,
he's a gem.
I can't wait to have Paul over for a barbecue. He's got to come. We're going to have a good time.
That's amazing.
Thanks so much for coming, you guys. It was a pleasure.